Hello, it's the Vookcast, episode number 168. We're the Vookcast, it's Australia's Nintendo podcast. I'm Stephen. I've got some friends with me today, a whole bunch of them. First, we've got a newcomer and roving cardboard reporter by the name of Luke. How are you doing?
Doing well, yourself?
Yeah, wonderfully, thank you. Also, we've got investigative mouse enthusiast Josh. What's up?
Wait, what?
Well, we were going to talk about Detective Pikachu, so that kind of is where that came from, but then it didn't.
Oh, I see. I wasn't a good enough detective to put that together.
Exactly, yeah, I should get on Detective Pikachu. We also have Chris. He's a friend to indies. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Very good on this public holiday, Good Friday.
Yes, man. We might even have this out on the weekend for something to listen to on the public holiday long weekend for all of our Australian friends. Cool. I hope you've
got 3 more days.
We get paid extra for the public holiday, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. Sorry. I didn't know where
that wasn't very convincing. Yeah.
Wow. You can tell I do this a lot. The Nindies showcase happened pretty recently-ish in the last few weeks. I only watched it literally this morning because I'm a bad Nintendo person, but so there's been a whole bunch of games announced in that. What we're going to do, I'm going to go through the list of everything that was announced, and then we're each going to bring up something that stood out as kind of interesting so that we don't have to go over each and every single one because we'll be here for a very long time. But everything that was announced, there was Mark of the Ninja Remastered, Fantasy Strike, Just Shapes
Stop.
And Beats.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah. Garage, Pool Panic, Pool Panic, Bomb Chicken, Lumines Remastered, Reigns, King and Queens, Lightfall, West of Loathing, Poody? I can't remember how they said that, but Poody. The Messenger, Bad North.
It's Swedish, so who knows?
Yes. Banner Saga 1, 2, and 3. So, let's begin with our thoughts. Luke, what were you kind of interested in with this one? What caught your eye?
There were two, but as Josh has taken one of mine, I'll stick with Lumines. Lumines Remastered. Straight up, when the first one came out on PlayStation Portable, or PSP back in the day, it was one game that, when I was working for EB Games many, many years ago, that took the store by storm. The assistant manager at the time, he ended up winning a competition. He won a 40-inch TV from Ubisoft for being, like, the best EB staff member player for Lumines at a competition. It was insane.
Wow.
That's how popular... We loved that game in that store.
And at the time, that would have been a massive TV.
Yeah, this was a 40-inch LCD, I think. So it wasn't plasma, which was the standard. This was a new type. Obviously, now it's all been completely overridden.
Yeah, 40-inch. What is this, baby television?
Yeah. So I was playing it then, but I really sunk time into the series when it hit Xbox 360 on the Live Arcade. So having that series come to Switch is phenomenal for me because it's a music game and I love music games. It's a puzzle game and I love puzzle games. Plus, it has endless replayability. So no matter how many times you play it, you can get 5 minutes out of it, 50 minutes out of it, and you're still going to love it. So I'm hyped for this time to come out.
Yeah, like I'm kind of curious. I've played Lumines. Is it Lumines? Am I saying that right?
It depends. Some people say Lumines, some people say Lumines. Like some people emphasize the N first as well. I don't know. I just say Lumines.
I know that
Lumines. Yeah, I always thought it was Lumines, so I feel like a right royal bogan right over here.
A long, hard day in the Lumines.
sounds like a pretty shitty job.
Okay,
sorry, that was delightful.
Sorry. Well, yeah, I don't know. Like, I've had some experience with Lumines, and I played it on PSP, and for some reason, I never worked out how to properly play. I got it again on Vita, and the same thing happened, so I probably won't buy it on Switch, but, like, I know that it has a rabid fan base of, like, when it first came out on PSP, every magazine that I was reading, just to give you how long ago that was, I was reading magazines, they were, like, incredibly, incredibly obsessed with this game. So there must be something good about it. It seems like something would fit extremely well on the Switch.
It's one of those things that if you get into that rhythm, you have to sort of work with the beat and with the blocks that you're given. If you get into that rhythm, though, you can actually start chaining up, much like Puyo Puyo, you can start chaining up massive amounts of one color when the line comes across. The biggest problem is some people play it like Tetris to begin with, just with different music, and it doesn't work that way at all. If you just start stacking blocks randomly, you'll end up with different, you know, single squares all over the place, and you can't chain, and you end up failing. So it takes a certain sort of skill set to get into, but once you understand it, once you're into it, the series, the game itself is just phenomenal. So
cool. Well, yeah, I think you've seen exactly what I've been doing with Lumines up until now, so maybe I'll try a different approach. Yeah, any other thoughts on Lumines from the rest of our esteemed panel?
Other than my incorrect pronunciation, it looked pretty.
Yeah, I remember it being a big showcase for the massive screen of the PSP, because that was a massive screen at the time, so it'll look even nicer on a nicer, bigger screen, I guess. Cool. So, Josh, Mark, I don't want to give away your game. What's your favorite game of this announcement, Josh?
Yeah. Well, we got half of it out, but I'm really looking forward to Mark of the Ninja.
Any particular reason? Or just, that's it?
You just are?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was waiting to see if we were getting a prompt or something. But, I played through the game on PC, and I really enjoyed it. It's one of those games that but clocks in at that sort of sweet spot around 10 hours, where it's not too long, not too short. It's just something you can play through in a couple of days and really enjoy. And it's got lots of replayability as well, because you've got so many options available to you. It's a lot like some other games in recent times, like Deus Ex games, where you've got lots of stealth options, lots of violent options, lots of pathways through levels. But what's interesting about it is it's a 2D platformer as well, rather than sort of this open 3D game, which is something really cool and unique about it compared to these other games like that.
Yeah, I've always thought it looked pretty appealing just from like video footage that I've seen of it. And I remember it went completely gangbusters when it came out on 360 and again on PC. It's another one that I just sort of played and, well, I bought and never touched for some reason. I did that a lot at that time, but yeah, I don't know. It looks like it should be right up my alley, so I'm actually pretty keen to grab this one once it, you know, comes to a platform that I still have hooked up to my television.
Yeah, and it looks really pretty as well.
It looks gorgeous. That's the thing that grabbed me straight away. Not the remaster, just in terms of the original one. But they never made a sequel. Mm. That upset me.
Well, let's all buy it.
But Clay have done a lot of really interesting games, so I think they don't really want to stick to one sort of niche, I guess. They've gone around, they've done Mark of the Ninja, they did Invisible Ink, which was stealth again, but it was a turn-based strategy. And I think they did Don't Starve, is that Clay as well?
Don't Starve is their recent stuff, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay, I had no idea.
Yeah, wow. I didn't even know they were behind Invisible Ink as well, because I played a bit of Invisible Ink a while ago and thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, they're a really talented studio.
Yeah, well, the guy who oversaw Mark of the Ninja, he left the studio. But he also oversaw, if you recall, Shank and Shank 2 on, they were published by EA. So they did those games, and then they went on to Mark of the Ninja, and it was very similar in terms of gameplay. Whereas Shank was more your Saturday morning action cartoon. Mark of the Ninja is obviously stealth based, but they sort of went on that, and then they just went completely in other directions. And I mean, the games have all been fantastic, but yeah, I want more Mark of the Ninja.
Cool. Chris, what caught your eye during this presentation?
Yeah, well, many of them really, but the one I'll focus on is West of Loathing, which is a bit of a 2D role-playing game. It's sort of open world in the way that it plays, but I picked it up on Steam just in the new year because one of the McElroy brothers from Polygon raved about it in their Game of the Year spiel for 2017. So I thought I'd pick this up and, played a little bit of it on Steam, where you play as this stick figure drawn cowboy in this stick figure drawn world, and everything's really basic, and it looks pretty unassuming in its visuals and its presentation, but it really uses that and the RPG elements it includes to almost parody and satire what we know to be a lot of RPG conventions from the likes of Skyrim and Fallout and that sort of thing in a 2D setting. And probably the biggest draw card for this is its wicked, surreal, absurd sense of humor. So it's got some genuinely good RPG elements, but it's just wickedly funny as well. So I'm really looking forward to this coming out on Switch and me putting many more hours into it.
Awesome.
It's kind of like, it's from the same people as Kingdom of Loathing, right? Which was a game from ages ago, which I remember took my school by storm because a lot of the similar reasons. It was hilarious and just totally off the wall with its humor.
Yeah, right. I'll have to go back and look that one up. I don't really know anything of Kingdom of Loathing, but if it's anything like West of Loathing, then count me in.
Got some homework to do, I guess.
I think it's pretty much the same thing, but in a fantasy environment.
Okay,
I just remember my friends losing their minds because there was a reference to, I think it was Castaway, where you end up injuring yourself to get a bloody handprint to put a face on a volleyball and then draw a face on the volleyball and it becomes a companion called Wilson.
That's very brilliant. 2003.
And Stephen, you've picked out something that you're pretty keen from the Nidhi Showcase.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. I had not heard of this game literally until this morning, but it's called The Messenger, and it looks visually very, very, very reminiscent of Shovel Knight. Like, not just in that it looks, oh, it's pixel art, lol, but, like, just the actual color palette of everything looks like, I don't know, enhanced 8-bit, but sort of not... Like, it's very difficult to describe, but something about Shovel Knight, it has a very distinctive look.
It's kind of 12-bit. It's not really 8-bit, but it's not quite 16-bit.
Yeah, that kind of works. Let's go with that. It's a 12-bit game. But yeah, it's sort of, instead of being a reimagining of a Mega Man-ish style game, it was more Ninja Gaiden. And that's something, a game that I've always looked on as being kind of interesting, but never played because I just didn't have it as a kid. So, I'm really keen. It looks really fun. You can kind of go around, be a ninja in these old school sort of levels, but its biggest claim to, like, individual feature, I guess, was you could change between an 8-bit and a 16-bit mode at will, and it would change the way the level layouts and enemies react and stuff like that, which kind of, I don't know how it'll work in game, but it's a really cool concept.
Yeah, nice. So does it, as you said, you're not sure how it will work in game, but do you know of any sort of changes it has to the gameplay? Like, does it have almost like Super Paper Mario was on the Wii, where you change your perspective and it changes how you play? Does it have that sort of look to it?
It was really hard to tell. Just from, like, the footage, it only really seemed to change things visually, but it sort of glossed over it very quickly.
Not. So what happens is you play the game, the bulk of the game at the beginning in the 8-bit style.
Yeah.
You're a messenger, as the name. You have to deliver a scroll. When you deliver the scroll, the guy says to you, hey, did you look at this? And you said, no. He goes, well, you open it up. So you open it up. It's actually a map of the world. So you actually, everything you ran past, you can now see. What happens, though, is the swap between the 8 and 16-bit visuals is actually time. So when you move forward in time, the game goes to a 16-bit style. When you go back in time, it goes to an 8-bit style. And as you are running through the past in the 8-bit style, if you take down a tree or something and then go to the 16-bit, that tree is gone. But that may have been a roadblock for you in the future. But if you go back in the past, take it out, it's not a roadblock in the future. So a lot of Ninja Gaiden meets sort of Back to the Future-ish stuff going on.
That sounds fun. Yeah, I think the video footage made it look like you did it more at will, but I guess, yeah, that makes a lot more sense of, you know, having it contextualized as a game story thing. It makes it a bit more interesting than just, you can go into 16-bit, lol.
Yeah, I think the footage, like, it did a good job in showcasing what it looks like, but it did not give the actual mechanics, any sort of time to shine. But then again, the Nindies, while, you know, it was packed with games, they're always very, very short presentations, so I think that didn't help at all.
It's really just a big sizzle reel with some, like, introductions in between.
Yeah. It's the Xbox press conference as opposed to the PlayStation of the Nintendo Direct.
Wow. That's some metaphors right there. Jeez. Some comparisons. Well, yeah, that was the Nindy showcase, but I'm really, really keen to hear more from you, Luke, because you went and played around with... Actually, I'll ask you now, that you would have heard Nintendo representatives say this. How do you say the topic we're about to talk about?
Officially, it is Labo.
Labo. Okay, Nintendo Labo. That is how we say it. You heard it here first. So yeah, please let me know. Like, what did you think of the whole experience? It must have been a very interesting. Instead of just seeing it on screen, you actually got to play around with it. And yeah, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, so Nintendo Australia hosted a big event, and it was different in that there was only a few media outlets invited, Vooks being one of them, and it sort of shocked me because. All these events I've gone to events around the world, and they're always the same. Person gets on stage, has a speech, bar gets opened, alcohol starts to flow, somebody will occasionally play a video game. This one, however, the majority of the room were 12 and under. So,
so that changes
right
things.
So right then, though, I knew, well, they were handing around juice boxes. Not glasses of juice, actual juice boxes.
Oh, that's the best.
So I knew then it was going to be a different type of event, and having gone through it now, I understand why. Because the kids, like the thing that we built, my group built, was the robot car, the RC car, and it was fine. It was a simple thing, couple of folds, it all snaps into place. No glue, no scissors, no paper, no anything. It just folds and snaps in place. But then after we did that. Everyone got to decorate it, and I saw googly eyes, felt, stickers, texters galore. There were glitter pens and paint pens everywhere. So I walked away from the event going, it's not for me, because I knew that going in it wouldn't be for me.
Fair enough.
But it's actually really impressive. So,
cool. Yeah, that's – I don't know. The creativity, it seems that's something they've really – sort of emphasized pretty thoroughly every time that they show this, and I guess it makes sense for them to go all out with texters and glitter pens and all the fun things at these events. It's, I know, the kind of thing that I can imagine as a kid I would have been all over, just like make my cool little robot car with googly eyes and cool armor or something.
Yeah, and I mean, so people at the Nintendo office down in Melbourne obviously had, you know, some free time because they had decorated some cars and the robot kit and a few other bits and pieces. And I'm not talking about, you know, what would be a 5-minute job for you or me, but, you know, there was a Richmond, an Essendon, I think a Collingwood RC car.
Wow.
but then somebody took the robot kit, and there's a picture of it on the site, and it says Labo, and it's all green. It's got like a monster on it, and it's not a quick job. It's like that would have taken some serious time. So I think kids are going to love doing that. They're going to love being able to take, you know, the bland cardboard, you know, box or whatever they're making and then make it theirs. It'll be their RC car or their motorbike. I think that's really going to appeal to the kids. It's obviously the parents are going to hate having glitter and all that everywhere, but the kids are going
to
love it.
You can, once you have kids, I suspect that's just something you have to accept. There will be things in places where they shouldn't be. It just happens.
True, very true. But in
terms of... I'm too scared to customize mine because I'm worried that I'll stuff it up and then I've just got a really crappy looking robot and then I don't know what to do.
So what actually impressed me was, I said, we did the RC car and I thought, you know, I took my niece with me and I thought, you know, we're going to be making one car, rah, rah, rah. Turns out, no, the actual sheet had two cars in it, had two RC cars, the little sticker reflective, you know, guidepost that you can do, and the little cardboard aerial for your Switch. And one of them had, like, green boxes around the edges of everything. So it was kind of like a pre-arted, you know, car.
Okay, yeah.
And the other one was completely bland. So there was not, apart from the folds and the gaps for everything, there was nothing else on there. So, you know, my niece took the green one and, you know, we put the hers together and then I put mine together. But the actual putting it together was the thing that sort of struck me as odd. It's really simplistic, but at the same time, it's so complex. On the Switch screen, you can use the A or Y buttons on a Joy-Con or a controller, or you can use the touch screen. So on the screen, there's a back button and a next button or a forward button. You press the button, it then moves on to the next step. If you want to go a bit slower, you press and hold on the forward button and drag it out, and it sort of stretches the button, and it slows things down a bit, and then it picks up speed and moves on. If you remember the Lego books, you know, when you're putting Lego together, you've got those like 40 pages, and you've got to go, you've got 2 steps per page sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very much that feeling, but just on a screen.
Okay.
I think seeing the steps illustrated would be more helpful as well, because there's some points with Lego where you're looking at the picture and you're like, whoa, hang on, how do I get to that from this?
Yeah, you're just like, which perspective are they looking at this from? And I guess with a screen, it's probably is you can adjust the perspective that you're looking at, I'm guessing, to sort of get an idea of where things go.
No. So it does that for you. So it tells you, you know, place it down this way first. And then it says, and it goes, now turn it over. And there's an animation of the actual cardboard turning over. So as it, you know, has you working on different parts or different ends of it, it actually rotates it around so you're actually looking at that particular end you're working on rather than the old Nintendo booklet of just the little icon that says turn it over.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the downside to it, though, is when it does those animations, it's really slow. And there's no way of really making it go faster, and that's sort of the downside. If you've got an impatient kid, you're going to find it'll work against you in that.
There'll be no speed run Labo building at all.
Well, there will be. The RC car, it's literally you fold the sides in, and then you snap them in, you fold the front down and put it in the holes, and it's done.
Okay.
It's really, really quick, that one. That's why they say it's a 15-minute build. In reality, it's probably more like a 3-minute build, but...
I didn't even want to think about how complex the robot is with all those rubber bands and everything.
Yeah, so, I mean, we obviously didn't get to build that, but I was talking with one of the guys there, and we went through how it all works. And the way it works is the 4 parts, one for each arm and leg, they're actually weights. So their default thing is to smack down to the bottom of the box, and the amount of string that you then have to have loose to go around the things in your hands or on your feet determines how much, you know, it requires it before it's pulled up into the sensor range. So if you have too much string, you can push your arm out to make a punch, but if the string's too loose, it won't pull the weight up, and the sensor won't read that weight's gone up. Obviously, though, that's probably the easier one. The thing, the fishing rod and the pianos are much more complicated in terms of the fiddly bits, but yeah. To each, I suppose to some people, one's going to be easier than the other.
I'm kind of curious what you thought of the games or the little applications that are built around the actual cardboard pieces. Did they seem like they were more just tech demos to give you something to do with these cool cardboard things, or do they seem, I don't know, that they've got any depth to them?
So the variety kit and the robot kit were all we had, and the variety kit is very much Wii Sports in its approach.
Right.
The RC car, like, it's literally just vibrating the motors. There's a lot more to it than just that if you need to get into the nitty-gritty, but it's a very basic one. The house, while probably entertaining, is also the second most basic one because it's essentially a Tamagotchi.
Okay.
So
you have me intrigued.
You can put different switches in either the side of the switch or from the bottom of the house, and different actions take place. Put two in, you go into a mini game. Put two different ones in, you'll go to another mini game. If you pick the house up and tilt it and shake it, you know, the actual house, you know, reacts because of the motion controls.
Okay.
So it's basically a Tamagotchi, but it's interesting. The motorbike and the piano are perhaps the most interesting out of the variety kit. Because, hey, everyone loves riding a motorbike. There's enough challenge in the courses and the speeds, like the 50cc, 100 and 250, to be, you know, entertaining. And, of course, you can obviously do the whole scanning your hand and stuff like to make your own courses. The piano, though, is by far the most complex because you can actually record sounds. So you can record your playback, then play another. You can swap out a tone card, pop in a different one, change it from the regular piano to the old man, make him sound like he's, you know, sucked on helium for all his life, and he's got a high-pitched thing. And you can combine all that together, and of course, because you've got a headphone jack on the Switch, plug it into your computer, pop it into whatever audio program you want to use, and you can actually record your music.
That's so really impressive. A lot
in that one. Yeah. And fishing is just fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just kind of impressed at the idea of, I don't know why I never thought of it before, but yeah, using the piano as literally an instrument would be kind of awesome. Like, that would be a really cool way to explore music for a kid who's just like, lol, music's dumb, I play video games. Oh, look, here's Labo. Oh, look, music's fun, I can record it to my computer. That looks, yeah, that's really interesting.
So the cool thing about the piano is it changes up because you can change out what they call bolts. So they're the sort of cardboard things that go in on the left, and that gives you the cats, the piano, the old man, and another one. I can't think what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, like the instruments, I guess.
But you can also... Yeah, so you're changing the tones that the piano makes.
Gotcha.
But then the big thing is the tone card. So there's a slot behind sort of the Switch screen, and you drop it in there and you load it up, and the Joy-Con actually scans it and makes a tone out of it. So if you do like a pyramid shape, that generates a specific set of tones for your piano. If you change it to three pyramids side by side, that then is a completely different set of tones. So you're not just, it's not just the same tone with slightly higher or lower pitch. It's completely different. If you make it into a wave, that's different again. There's a punch card with a lot of holes in there, and you pop out different ones and you get another tone card completely different to somebody who's punched out different holes on their card. So there's a lot that you can do with that piano.
Yeah, that's really... Yeah, I've already said it. I'm just kind of impressed. That sounds super... I don't know, like, you could play around with it, you could experiment with it. That seems like, of everything you've talked about, the thing that would have some sort of lasting staying power, it would be just playing around with that musical instrument.
So that obviously would be if you're a music guy or a music person. The motorbike, because you can make your own tracks. I think people are really going to, you know, get that. I don't know if you can share the tracks, though. That's something nobody's talked about or nobody confirmed anything about. If you could, that would be fantastic. You know, 50 new tracks a week for your motorbike. Kids would never run out of, you know, things to race on. But sadly, nobody's said anything about if they can be shared or not. So if you can't share them, it kind of defeats the purpose of, you know, making this awesome racetrack if you're the only one who's ever going to, you know, play on it.
Yeah, it's like, you got to come to my house to play my racetrack. That's not really that fun.
No, good thing the Switch is portable, so.
True.
Not all the cardboard you have to take with it, though. So easy to carry.
Bring your Switch and also an entire motorbike made of cardboard.
So the other thing, too, is we also got time with the Discovery Mode, which is in what they call the Toy-Con Garage, or Garage, depending on how you want to pronounce that word. And
carport.
That was actually... No. Carport has no door. This has doors, you know. But no. So it's basically... They call it an input and output thing, but it's if you do this action, then this happens. And it can be if you press the A button, your Switch, you know, makes a meow noise, right? If you press the B button, it's an old man saying, hey. So there's a whole range of different things you do there, but it's not just pressing a button. It's if you move the joystick, if you move the control stick on the Joy-Con, the right Joy-Con vibrates. Cool. If you touch the screen, the right Joy-Con vibrates. If the IR camera lines up with a marker, you know, you get a gunshot noise. And it's pretty much, if you can think of it, you can say, if I press the A button, the Switch counts down from 10 and then fireworks go off. So it's all noise and stuff on the screen. But, you know, you're programming then. You're doing actual, I'm doing this and it's causing this to occur.
Yeah, it sounds like very, like, you know, if this, then that sort of logic stuff, which is, that's really interesting. Like, if you're not into music, but maybe you're into programming, here's a way to jump into that too.
Yeah, and that's the thing that sort of shocked me was I knew that was there. Like, they put out that video on YouTube. I knew it was there. But the amount of detail that you can go into, and you don't need to know programming. It's like you create your action. So you have a box there and then you customize it. Say, yeah, I'm pressing up on the D-pad. And then, okay, that's your input. your output is what do you want to happen. So if you want your switch to play a random sound, you know, you choose that, and then you draw, you take your finger and you draw a line from your input to your output. So it's a visual way of doing it. So there's no, you don't need to know that, hey, if I press this button, then I want this out. You don't have to type it out in code or anything. It's all just visually done, which I think is going to get a lot of kids involved in programming, because even myself, and I know basic coding, sometimes you look at code and you go, that just is too confusing. I'm not going to pay attention to it. But visual stuff, you know, like Mario Maker, you can get it really easily and start building straight away. So
nice. That's really cool. Any other thoughts on Labo before we move on?
Yeah, this is the downside to it. Oh. It's cardboard.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And I have to mention this because, like, I mean, the moment they announced it, I knew it was going to, there was going to be an issue with it. So the house that we were working with, the buttons and switches and things that you put in the sides, they contain moving parts. Cardboard is paper. Paper, after you, you know, fold it and crunch it up a lot, tends to start to fall apart. Those switches had been replaced after the first two sessions, and we were in the third session of four. Each of the sessions in the playroom were 2 hours long. So that meant after 4 hours, they were replacing the switches. The fishing rod that we were using quite literally had bits falling off of it in our session.
Yikes.
And to make it worse, the robot, the hands were fine, but the feet, basically it's an elastic sort of strap that goes from the bottom of the cardboard, which is basically just a straight, you know, eye piece of cardboard, goes from there around, back through, and then back through, kind of like the old Stack Hat helmet sort of system. At the top of it is where all the string gets tied around, and that's where you adjust your length. The problem is the cardboard at the bottom where the strap begins, it keeps stomping on the ground. Every time, you know, people putting their foot down to walk, you know, it was hitting the ground. It had to be replaced after our session. So you have 4 hours and 6 hours where, you know, some of the most crucial bits of the actual cardboard had to be replaced. And again, so I put in the article, it could be because it was an event and kids, you know, they don't care. It's not theirs, you know, being a bit rougher than normal. But if 4 hours or 6 hours for some fiddly bits of cardboard is the most you're going to get before it needs to be replaced or is on its way out, for the amount of money you're spending, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. It's essentially a cardboard pair of shoes in that case. But, like, that's... Yeah, I kind of see what you mean. It obviously is going to fall apart. It's made of cardboard and you're stepping on things with your feet. It's not meant for that, but like, ooh, yeah, it's a little bit worrying just how short-lived it might be.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, pictures on the internet of people that have 3D printed their own house for the Switch to sit in. And it's like, well, that's cool, but the house is fine. The house is a house. It doesn't do anything.
Mm.
It's all the fiddly bits that I think are going to wear out faster. Things like the motorbike that had some odd bits with like the ignition trigger that you know, the button you've got to push to start the bike up before each race, you know, that was a very thin, small bit of cardboard and, you know, people pushing that in, that was bending as well. So I think the smaller parts are really gonna.
Yeah. Like anything moving or rubbing up against another piece of cardboard is just going to wear both sides down.
But that's the thing, the piano didn't, and the piano's got all those keys and it was fine.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I think it's because they were very, because it basically boxes the keys. So I think it was because it was the trigger button and all the little fiddly bits that are compressing and twisting more than, you know, the piano keys, which is going up and down. So who knows? As I said, it could be because it was in, you know, events and maybe the people in the first session were just absolutely brutal with it.
Maybe.
And it's just, you know, cascaded down the line. But it's probably the one thing to keep an eye on. It's because if those things go and they're not easily replaceable, then, you know, it could be a costly experiment.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. We're glad you went to that event and gave us the wonderful lowdown. The full article that you mentioned is on the website as well, so give that a peek if you want a bit more in-depth detail and those photographs of the cool Labo bits and pieces. But we're going to move on to the games that we've been playing over the last week and a bit. We've been playing Kirby Star Allies, or at least I know Josh has. I did check.
I have indeed been playing.
I checked who's been playing, and I completely forgot it. So I'm a delightful host. but yeah, Josh, let me know what you've been thinking about Kirby. I've heard lots and lots of like positivity from friends about this. So give me the lowdown.
Yeah, so I've really enjoyed it. It's not a particularly difficult game, which has put a lot of people off. I mean, I've seen a lot of complaints on Eero and stuff like that, where they've been like, oh, what do you mean it's easy? Why would I play it? It's only a few hours long. I'm not going to be challenged. But it's just a really nice game. Like, I think, so the difficulty's not the be-all and end-all, so long as there's something keeping you there. And it's a really aesthetically nice game. It's got really cute animations. The levels are designed really pretty. And it's really fun to play as well. The abilities all have different movesets, which means that there's a reason to play through all the different modes a few different times. And it does actually get challenging in some of the post-game content as well. I'm really stuck on the final challenge that I've got to do there. And I'm not sure if I'll get through that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of, I don't know, I know that it looks very, so some people might see it as a bit sort of saccharine oversweet, but I don't know, it looks like a game that is designed to make you grin like a loony as its first and foremost like goal is to make you a happy person. And if you are, you know, challenged by the gameplay, then that's all nice and good, but it's not really the intent of this game. And I guess, I don't know. I don't know why people expect Kirby games to sort of fit the mold of a more challenging 2D platformer. Like, I guess maybe they did a little bit in the past, but I don't know. They've always, it just looks like something that would make me smile from start to finish. So that's all I really want it to do.
Honestly, these days,
yeah, pretty much.
Expecting Kirby game to be hard is like expecting a Dark Souls game to be easy.
Yeah, like games are what they are, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much games can offer outside of challenge as well. Mm. So I think just looking for challenge and difficulty is a really reductive view.
Agreed. I love the Kirby games. So I've been playing it as well. And just the sheer number of things to find in the worlds in each level is insane. You know, some of them have the giant button. Some have, you know, just dozens of jigsaw pieces. So, you know, if you want to really get your most out of it, you have to keep playing and going back into those worlds and trying to find everything. So,
cool. Any other thoughts? Or is that a quick Kirby?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. But a lot of people have been put off because the game seems to be really multiplayer focused.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
And apparently in the demo, which I haven't played, the AI assistants apparently just dominate everything and really make you redundant in that demo. But I haven't noticed that in the main game because, if you just sit there and do nothing, the allies can help, but they're not going to play the game for you. But the one issue that I have had playing by myself is that you don't have control over which allies are going to team up and combine their abilities. So you might have a few different elemental abilities.
You can take control over the allies, though. That's the thing. If you jump on them,
yeah,
you can
ride
them around
but,
like outlaw
like if
horses.
You're trying to combine them to get specific combinations, like if you're trying to get a fire yo-yo.
Yeah, that you can't do. But you can actually control. Yeah. You can actually jump on their back and ride them around.
Yeah, yeah. So you can make use of any of the abilities on your team, but sometimes you might want to combine specific ones together, but you might have a few that can override each other, and so the wrong ones will jump in at the wrong times and you lose your abilities. And it's a bit annoying. Like, not game-breakingly annoying, but just kind of
frustrating.
Yeah.
I guess it's probably emulating your annoying friend who just jumps in and screws everything up, so maybe it's just emulating multiplayer.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking of it.
That's me, creative thinking. Cool. Kirby Star Allies, I guess. It has annoying AI partners sometimes, but it will make you smile. It seems like a good summary of that one. Chris, you've been playing Cluster Truck. What the truck is Cluster Truck? What is this?
Yeah, that's probably a good way to introduce it. It is quite a bizarre concept because it's a first-person 3D platformer, quite singular in its goal in terms of you're placed in various levels where all you have to do is get from point A to point B. However, between point A to point B, there are a large amount of trucks that you have to jump across to get to the end of the goal, and they're not stationary. They're moving at various speeds and making stupid maneuvers, so quite like real life trucks.
sorry,
and
truck drivers.
I'm not sorry, but yeah, it's quite a novel little concept where the various levels that you put in are more and more bizarre and wacky the further you go into the game, to the point where you start off in, you know, this nice sort of open desert world setting for the first 10 levels, and these trucks are going along pretty basic roads, which are more or less relatively straight. So you just have to make sure you time your jumps correctly to land on the trucks, because it's sort of a, you know, the floor is lava sort of concept. If you fall off the trucks or make any contact with the ground, you fail that level and then have to restart. Then the concepts get pretty wacky from there on. Then you have to dodge all sorts of obstacles, such as cannons, lasers, lava, actual lava, and all sorts of other various obstacles that the game throws at you. And the real kicker to Cluster Truck is that when you do fail a level, and it's not a case of if, it's when, because some of these levels are pretty chaotic and crazy in their nature. But the time from failing a level to pressing a button and restarting that level is pretty well instantaneous. So it really does capture that, you know, one more go sort of try. So there were levels where I think I attempted to beat them possibly over 100 times, but it was just so easy to jump back in and have another go and try and learn from what I did beforehand, or lament one truck's last minute 3-point turn that it tried to pull, which meant I completely missed my jump. It's got a fair amount of content. There's well over 100 levels to go through, of varying lengths and complexities and obstacles and that sort of thing. So it's a relatively simple concept, but there's plenty of variation to keep you going and keep you interested throughout. There are two main things which I'll touch on in my review, which should be up pretty soon, is that one of the negatives is that there are a couple of bugs which are, and this isn't hyperbole in saying this, but are actually game-breaking, in terms of there's just a small handful of levels where if you fail and the particular angle you make contact with the ground, or maybe if you're touching a truck at the same time, the game will crash to the point where pressing any button will become unresponsive, so you can't go back to the menu, you can't restart the level. You actually have to press the home button on the Switch, close the game, and reopen it. So that's Jeez. A bit of a pain. However, it is something that the developers, they have already submitted a patch which will fix it. I'm not sure if it's live yet, but it's a matter of when, not if, that gets fixed. And then the other negative is that there are some levels where you have to rely on the trucks lining up in a particular way for you to be able to sort of traverse a big gap or a particular obstacle. And the trucks are a little bit random in their sort of path tracking. So sometimes it will be nearly impossible to complete a level because the trucks simply haven't lined up in a particular way that actually allows you to cross the gap. Which, on one hand, it's cool that there's a little bit of that spontaneity and that random element which keeps things fresh. So it's not just a case of committing things to muscle memory. There is an element of, you know, thinking on your feet and you know, using quick reaction time to cross a bunch of trucks to avoid an oncoming boulder or something, Indiana Jones style. Not that Indiana Jones had to jump across various trucks, but you get the point.
But if he did, it would be very similar to this.
Yeah, possibly. I think in one of the movies there was like a truck fight scene where he did fight on top of a truck, but there's no combat in this one, so not quite Indy Jones sort of stuff. But as I was saying, there's enough sort of randomness and spontaneity that it does capture your attention. It's not just a case of, okay, when I start this level, I have to wait 3 seconds for this other truck to appear, then I'll jump on this one, then I'll jump on that one, blah, blah, blah. there is a case of, you know, if you try that, then it's highly likely that a truck that you'll be expecting to appear in a particular place or, you know, expect to follow a particular path, you can't rely on that to happen because there's every chance that the truck will spin out or hit an obstacle and get totaled or flip over upside down. So you've really got to think on your feet. But sometimes, just sometimes, it can work against you, which is a little bit frustrating and a little bit unfair. But for the most part, I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with the game.
It is kind of interesting. It's such a very, I don't know, it's a line you really have to toe between randomness and complete chaos, because like it makes me think of it, the game is nothing like it, but just purely in the randomness aspect, like games like Spelunky, where the levels are fully randomly generated, basically, but they're randomly generated in a way that it's impossible for you to get a level that can't be completed due to any sort of combination. And it sounds like that's not quite how this has worked. It sounds like it's a pretty rare thing that it, you know, is literally unfinishable for a level, but it's a bit of a shame that you can't, they couldn't have made it work in a way that it will never be unfinishable, I guess.
Yeah, it's, and as I say, and I will emphasize that it is an absolute minority of the levels where I found this to be the case. I'll try and illustrate one level in particular, where you start on, like, it's in, like, I'm trying to remember, I think it's World 7 or something, which is sort of like a Tron-like electronic landscape, and you're following this line, this convoy of trucks heading along a road, and then at the end of the road, there's this big drop that goes straight down, and then after a few seconds of a straight down plummet, there's another road which heads out sort of at a 90 degree angle from that drop with another set of trucks that you have to jump on and follow them through to the finish.
Okay.
However, the only way that you could only that you could actually land on those trucks and use those trucks would be if the initial convoy you're following falls in a certain way that allows you to jump off them onto the next set of convoy, which sometimes the trucks don't quite fall in your favor, which can be a bit frustrating.
I mean, I do really like the idea that it's not the same thing each time, because I don't know, I find myself gravitating more to games where it's less about muscle memory and more about improving your general sort of knowledge and technique and skill in how the game plays, rather than just being able to memorize and perform a specific sequence of events in the right timing. It's sort of, I guess, when things happen randomly, it's like, okay, I have to be able to, in a fraction of a second, establish what's going on, react to it, and actually perform that action in a way that it's going to be successful. And it's so, so fun when you pull that sort of stuff off. But
you've totally nailed the high points of Cluster Truck, is that it really does capture that feeling of, oh, hang on, this meticulously crafted plan that I've come up with to finish this level is falling apart in a matter of a split second. How do I fix that issue? Oh, okay, I'll try and string together a period of jumps off of these trucks. And there are times where you build up quite some speed to jump across a bunch of trucks, dodge an obstacle, avoid a flying rock or a truck that's been launched out of a cannon as a projectile to knock you off another truck, then there are some pretty chaotic moments where it produces some pretty memorable moments where you get into a state of flow, and it just feels the tangible feeling of completing a level is it's pretty good. So
nice.
There's plenty of those moments.
I have to ask, does the end result come down to truck, yeah, or is it more truck?
Depending on the level, bit of both, really, because truck most of the heck. Time, the former, most of the time it's the former. But on those handful of levels where it was a bit buggy or it didn't become apparent that I could actually finish the level, then it was a bit of a truck and shame.
Truck this.
Indeed.
Truckin' A.
Well, I guess that'll bring us to the end of this truckin' episode of the Truckin' Vookcast. So, yeah, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. If you want to read more about our reviews and features and all that fun junk, it's on vooks.net. It's like books, but with a V. We're on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and all of the social bits and pieces at VOOKSDOTNET. And if we wanted to find our fun, fantastic friends that have been on this episode, where can we find you, Chris, on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at BibbyBoy. That's one word, BibbyBoy.
Cool, cool. And Josh?
I am on Twitter as at MarioBones, Mario_Bones. 2 underscores are in this season. And you can also find me at monamiibo.com, which is N-O... Oh, no. Sorry, I spelled my own name wrong. M-O-N-amiibo.com.
I'll place a link to it in the show notes, just in case that wasn't clear. And how about you, Luke? Where can we find your bits and pieces?
Well, for my personal rant and ravings, it's on Twitter at Renderman7. And, you know, big points to anybody who knows what Renderman's from. And then for everything else, it's at _MaxiGeek.
Cool, cool. And if you want to find me, I'm at Stephen Impson on most things. Just look for me. I'm probably there. But yeah, so that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you ever so much for listening. Yeah, we'll catch you next time that we're around. Say goodbye, everyone.
See ya.
Fuck off.
You beat me to it.
Bye.
And this is such a truckin' show.
What a truckin' truck wreck.
Well, I've had a truckin' good time.
Truck the lot of you. Okay, cool.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.